I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Fine, making connections once again is Taylor Ann Bradford, Gloucester Times journalist. And Taylor Ann, welcome back. And once again, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thanks so much, Rick, for having me, and eager to chat about what's been going on in the city.
Looking forward to it. And there is so much going on. Seems to be a wide awakening news article every single day lately. And let's start with what's going on at City Hall in Gloucester, because I don't know the exact headline, but there was something actually in today's edition, Wednesday's edition of the Gloucester Times, about maybe getting another new chief administrative officer in the city, and that that makes several in the last short amount of time. So why don't you educate me on that?
Yeah, so Nicole Kieser, the current acting chief administrative officer, will be the third CAO to leave in 9 months. She announced in an email to councilors, managers, and the mayor on Tuesday that she'll be leaving as of May 7th and will not seek confirmation by the city council. Now, in the email, she had noted that her reasons for leaving were personal, but she also knows that the lack of specifics can lead to rumors and misinformation. She was very specific to identify that she will be always committed to the mayor, and she has respect and admiration for the mayor's steadfastness within her position as mayor. You know, I reached out to Nicole, to the mayor, and to the assistant to the CEO, Krista Carranza, but none of them answered neither their phone nor their email. So it was only the email that she had sent to these individuals that we had for information. And what she included into the email was that she knows that people will hear the news of her leaving and assume that she's leaving because she wasn't qualified or overwhelmed, but she was very clear to note that that was not the case. Now, in that email, she did not clarify why she was leaving other than that it was personal, but she did note that the mayor has supported her decision to leave and that they will be working on options to fill the position. And so, again, she's the third CEO to leave as in 9-10 months. The first one was Jim Destino. He had kind of been the CEO for a while. You know, he came back, he left, he was trying to decide if he would leave or retire or not. He finally left in April. Vanessa Krosick then was the interim, and on January 26th of this year, she resigned from her position, and we're still not sure the specifics of why she left other than that she resigned. And then Nicole Kieser took her place. So she took on that role in January, and announced yesterday that she'll be leaving.
Well, you're right. People tend to try to fill in the blanks and speculate, which is sometimes a fun little exercise, but that's pretty much all it is. And one thing I learned in education, Taylor, is that when you apply for a personal day, to take the day off, personal means personal, and no questions asked, that's it. And I think from my point of view, that's something that makes sense, and it should be respected. When someone says it's personal, there's a reason for that. So we'll see how it plays out, of course, and maybe who the next CAO is, or acting CAO. But it is interesting that there's a revolving chair in there right now, and we'll see how that's... Plus, this is an election year, too, isn't it?
Yeah, so this is an election year, so it'll be quite interesting. I know that we've been looking around to see who's been pulling papers people, the city hall's opened up that opportunity for people. And I've seen a lot of school committee members and a few maybe city councilors looking to get reelected or reappointed. But we also have a few people who weren't in those positions prior who are also running. So that story will come soon, but it'll be so interesting. I know that the mayor said that she will be running again, and a couple other people. So we'll kind of see what this looks like going forward, because the CAO position obviously is not an election, mm-hmm. an elected a position. It's a hired position. And so, you know, whoever's in that role come, you know, within the next year, it'll be interesting to see who fills in the position of CAO and kind of then who are the elected officials that surround that position.
I think there's going to be a lot of news coming up in the next 8 or 9 months. Let's turn over to some nature work now. I heard something, and this is kind of an older story for you, but I heard something over the weekend about destroying a beaver dam in Goose Cove Reservoir or something. What is that all about?
Yeah, so this is, again, this I talked with Department of Public Works Director Mike Hale over on April 13th about this, so just kind of getting a timeline for when this news had come out. Gloucester is or has been draining the wetlands near Goose Cove Reservoir to save the integrity of the reservoir dams and protect the city's drinking water. And so we had heard a little bit of chatter around the city about, you know, these dams, these, you know, beaver-made dams being drained or being water levels are being brought down, and trying to understand why that was the case. And they noted that that the city had received proper permitting for emergency work to drain the swampy area adjacent to the South Dam near Goose Cove Reservoir that was created by beavers, so that the water levels return to the natural level to prevent encroachment on the dam. So if you look at the dam that is made by the city to kind of hold that water in place, on the other side of it, the beavers have also created a dam, and it's raised the water levels. And the way that Mike Hale had mentioned it is that you can't have the water levels on both sides being exactly the same, or else it's going to really compromise the dam that the city has created. And the concern about that is that that reservoir holds so much water that the city uses for drinking, for emergencies, for a lot of different things. And so if that were to fail, then the city would be in a lot of trouble. And so that's why it's an emergency work order. And so it's really interesting to think about, you know, what that reservoir represents. It holds more than 300 million gallons of water. And so failure to occur would be detrimental to life and property downstream, Hale had mentioned. And I mean, I guess the biggest question, I know, not the biggest, but a question that a lot of people are asking is, what about the beavers, right? These are also their homes. And Hale mentioned that the city was able to seek legal permit and hire a company to remove any beavers they might find in order to keep water levels down. So they're not going out there hunting beavers. That's not what's happening. They're really focusing on the beaver-made dams and trying to bring that water level down. But if they do find beavers, the state law does not allow municipalities to move beavers to alternative locations. So if they set traps and they find beavers, they can't move them, but they also can't release them. So I asked Hale, you know, what happens to these furry creatures if they're captured? And he said, what is done to the beavers after that is up to the trapper. And that's all he could say. So I think that's the question that everyone's kind of thinking about and wondering, you know, what would happen. But that's the news, and if you go by Goose Cove Reservoir and you see some work being done by the Department of Public Works, that's what's happening.
I have a one-word reaction to that, and you know what it is. Damn! Oh, my goodness. Fascinating story, and I didn't know any of that, so thank you. I missed that last week. All right, and continuing on the Nature Watch, what's this about mosquito control?
Yeah, so Governor Charlie Baker last year signed a law that allows the State Reclamation and Mosquito Control Board authority to fight mosquito-borne illnesses such as the West Nile virus, Triple E, that I think all of us were very well aware of about 2 years ago. And they're given this authority when the State Department of Public Health determines that there's an elevated risk. Now, cities and towns have the ability to opt out of this program, but only until May 15th. And so the cities and towns here in Cape Ann are rushing to get that opt-out portion done because a lot of them right now are no-spray zones, such as Gloucester, Rockport, and Essex. But if they are not to do the proper paperwork by May 15th, then they'll automatically lose their agency within to kind of control the mosquito management plan, and the state will kind of run it for them. And so what the biggest concern is by a lot of people, why they're kind of trying to get all this stuff done to opt out of the program, is because there's a concern by some people on Board of Health, of the community, of those who work within the lobster industry, is that the specific pesticide that the state currently uses to mitigate the mosquito population is allegedly really bad for marine life. They use something called Anvil 1010. It's a pesticide that alleviates the number of mosquitoes in outdoor, residential, and recreational areas, and it contains an active ingredient, sumithrin and piperonyl butoxide. I spoke with Patty Page of the Gloucester Opt-Out Initiative, and she said that, there had been a legal fight between Long Island and Connecticut fishermen in the state back in 2000 where the pesticide methoprene, that's also a part of all these different pesticides that they use to kill mosquitoes, was also killing lobsters. And so she's been really fighting to make sure that, the city really works hard to get this paperwork done because it could be detrimental to the fishing and the lobstering community here in Gloucester. And there's been a lot of talk about how to do it and what the city would do if they were able to opt out. And so Max Schneck over at the health department at Gloucester had mentioned that, as of right now, they don't spray. Obviously, Gloucester's a no-spray area. And what they do is, personal awareness and protection and kind of education on, your own bug spray and making sure that you're able to, kind of have the best awareness, what the best defenses are against diseases caused by mosquitoes or ticks. And so it's a really interesting conversation because it's one of these things where it's an opt-out program versus an opt-in program. And so if cities don't opt out and aren't active and aware enough to opt out of the program, then the state will automatically kind of take over control. And a lot of people are saying, well, this should have been an opt-in program because these communities are a no-spray zone. And so just a little bit for context, is so the city's Gloucester's Board of Health will be meeting on Thursday to review a proposed application that outlines an alternative mosquito management plan that's required for them to opt out of the state-conducted spraying. So they're starting the process this Thursday, but they have to do it rather quick because, again, they only have until May 15th to get it done, and it's adjacent towns such as Rockport is, just right up behind them. They're also meeting at 5:30 on Thursday to have the same discussion, how can we continue to do our opt-out program now that we're realizing this deadline is fast approaching.
That is such a bizarre story. And goodness gracious, the lobstermen don't need any more impediments to what they're doing. Good Lord. Fascinating. So we'll keep our eye on that. Thank you. And I guess the final discussion point would be around the Board of Health is coming up with a code of conduct. It seemed as though City Council tried to do something similar. What's this all about?
Yeah, so we had discussed a little bit about what does it look like for the city to have a code of conduct. Val Gilman had proposed a couple different things, just saying what is the best way that we can kind of go about doing our jobs here in the city and really holding ourselves accountable and thinking about what does that look like on the ground. And she and John McCarthy had gone to a couple of different MMA, Massachusetts Municipal Association conferences and talks to kind of look about best practices and what are other municipalities doing about having code of conduct and, making sure that elected officials and members and commissioners of boards can, be held accountable and hold each other accountable for their actions. They are drafting up an idea of, what this might look like. Six city councilors, including Val Gilman, who kind of spearheaded the project, are looking to create this code of conduct to foster a workplace of dignity, respect, and tolerance. Val Gilman, who's the city council vice president, had mentioned that the timing of the drafted resolution is right. In quote, she said, in today's political climate, what elected officials would not want to sign a resolution committing to treating people with dignity and respect. A lot of counselors agreed. They said, this is a great opportunity just to kind of solidify the thing that we're already doing. John McCarthy said, it's a good reminder to treat people with dignity and respect. Those two words, dignity and respect, are the ones that keep coming up in this conversation. Jamie O'Hare added that, people are already doing this. And it's, again, just a good reminder, and it's common sense to a lot of people. The resolution does come at a very timely matter, because as two city employees, as we've discussed in the past, have gone public with complaints they have filed against the mayor, that accusing her of making abusive and harassing and inappropriate comments, to employees and members of the public. Now, I asked counselors, you know, is this code of conduct that they're drafting, does it have any way relation to the situation that's going on with the mayor? And they said no. This is something that they've been talking about for quite a while now. You know, some of the conferences that Val and John had gone to were way back. But that doesn't negate the fact that it is timely. Like, it is a good reminder, again, as they're saying, to respect everyone. And so, although it's not a direct correlation to what's been going on, you said, you know, it's a good reminder, and it's a good way to kind of continue the conversation of how we can respect one another, even when all these allegations are going on. And so I think the really interesting thing, and I do want to highlight this before we end, Rick, is, you know, what the current drafted code of conduct, how does it hold people responsible? And as of right now, as it is drafted, it says that any elected official or board member who are bystanders or witnesses of unprofessional behavior or hostile work behavior are encouraged by the drafted code of conduct to support the victim by letting the victim know he or she is not alone, affirming that the behavior is not acceptable, and helping identify resources for further follow-up. You know, they mentioned that with boards and commissioners, if they are, if there's allegations against them of, obstructing these code of conduct, then they might, be removed from different assignments, or kind of be publicly reprimanded or censured if they violate the code of conduct. But for elected officials, it's not the same thing. They don't have the same discipline criteria as employees, but it doesn't negate the importance of raising the bar and treating each other in the same way, with respect, with dignity. And as I talked with counselors, they kind of mentioned that for elected officials, it's kind of discussing a little bit more of how do you talk with it and kind of work towards a resolution, as I think this code of conduct is doing. It's kind of looking beyond the person, seeing, okay, what can we do to really make sure that we have a good structure going forward into the next year. So there's a lot there. It's quite meaty. There's a lot on our page. The counselors voted last week to move the discussion to the city's ordinance administration standing committee. So they're scheduled to meet on May 3rd. So this discussion is going to be ongoing. The general counsel is already giving some of his perspective, and they'll be looking to have more discussion come May 3rd.
Well, we're going to link to all these articles, and I said I wasn't going to editorialize, but I must say that it's stunning to me that we are at this point in our society that we're doing this. These are things that ordinarily would be taught in school from grades K to 12, I guess. But it's a different era, and so we'll keep our eye on that. Final question, Taylor. Now you're eligible for vaccination now, yes?
I am, yes, yeah.
Hallelujah. Good. And do you have an appointment yet?
So I've actually already gotten my first, and I am just waiting the 3 weeks to get my second. So,
fantastic.
How about yourself?
Oh, we're all done. The family's all set.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so we're from the youngest to the oldest, so we're very, very, very grateful. And things are going well. So, hey, spring is here, I want to thank you so much once again for dropping by, and we'll check in again in a couple of weeks.
That sounds great. Have a wonderful weekend.
This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.